Blog Talk Radio.
Crazy cluttered spaces that you could not cross. My attic is full of bones and full of holes with young emotions that just won't grow up. I keep hiding the keys in all these places even I can't find. Hoping one day you'll find them all and I will.
Welcome to Sweet Discussions here on Blog Talk Radio with the group All Poetry Behind Us, the world's longest poetry internet space. Inside of that space is a group of artists on Team of Voices. I'm happy to be part of that group. We love to be open with our voices on several subjects through the art of poetry. If you ever stop by, come on and give us a look. This is Sweet Pea, and you are listening to the artist Pink and her song, My Attic, on the debut album, Hurts to Be Human. It was one of the great songs that rocketed right out as the number one single, written by Julia Michaels, who had helped Pink write a couple of her other hits, such as Trauma. It's one of my favorite songs because it definitely has a lot of metaphorical meaning. It goes along with tonight's theme of soapbox, a lot of things in there that we want to get out and talk about and feel we have a right to. I really thought the song kind of contributes to some of the things that we keep in that, we'd love to say and go out and stand up and do things. And some of those things that we have to say, we often put our foot in our mouths because some people don't always have the same perceptions that we do. That's definitely kind of the theme tonight that we'd like to talk about and go out and discuss. So if you guys want to join us, you can always give us a call at 646-668-2832. 937. I already have some of my favorite guests on the line, so we're going to say hello to Rackentor. Rackentor, say hello to the world.
Open mouth, slot A, insert foot, tab B.
We also have the wonderful AP from Australia, the world down under. Say hello, AP.
Oh, hello, sweet. How are you?
I'm doing well. Have you ever heard Pink's Attic? I love that song so much.
I'm always going to have a different perspective of the world this week because I'm looking up at it and you're looking down at it.
So you could look up a skirt.
Oh, only you, Rackentor. Only you. This is why I this is not a Sunday night show, so I will not go there at all.
I will mention that. I know the reason I know that song is from you playing it, though. And like you said about the metaphor, you know, that's beautiful to latch onto, that metaphor. Oh, you know, it's kind of a modernized, you know, the corners of my mind thought. I love that metaphor too. So yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely, I do. Yeah, I agree. I love the metaphorful things that are in there, and it can be taken so many different ways. So I thought it was beautiful. Tonight, I've got some poems I know that are coming in. My board's not really filled right now because the whole soapbox idea, you know, slipping off your soapbox and everything, it's kind of interesting. A lot of people don't like to admit they slip off their soapbox or, you know, the soapbox can be very political, a hot topic. And obviously we don't want to go into all the hot topics we have going on right now because, there's a lot. But, you know, there are some you want to talk about, you know, animals and you know, you don't want all the elephants to disappear on the planet, things like that. But AP, you threw one up on the board. So why don't you go ahead and read that right away? Because anything you talk about there is great. So
okay.
Go right ahead.
I was sitting here waiting for the program to start, right? And as I did, I had my 10 or 12 minutes where I wasn't being interrupted by anybody else and stuff. So I took that time and wrote this. So I'm not sure if it's going to have, you know, a lot of meaning to the world because it didn't spend a lot of time and it's just in its gestation. But it doesn't have a title, but it goes like this. Don't know if you've ever slipped, but soap can cause you to fall. And whether it's stumble or tripped, most likely will end up with a call to a doctor with troubles where a tear or maybe even much worse. The muscles spare and pain leads to anger's curse. But if you take all this and add a box, well, the outcome can get higher. As with rains, more likely all rocks and tumbles to damage, not inspire. So then stand up on top of the thing because that will make it more stable and hope someone out there is listening because this tower will soon be a fable. End quote.
Well, there you go. I love this. Witty, charming, very truthful. You know, you have this quick wit that is just astounding. And just listening to you sometimes, it either makes me giggle. It always evokes emotion for me. Generally, it's a giggle. Sometimes it's very profound. A couple of weeks ago, you really stopped me in my tracks on one of my shows. And I got to tell you, I've shared that a lot with people. And many of them are like, what? So, but if you take all of this and add a box, well, the outcome can only get higher. All the rains more likely all rocks and tumbles damage, not inspire. I got to tell you, I've definitely been up there. I have this whole mathematical thing I do with people, and I like to kind of bring them down a notch when mathematicians kind of like get in my face a lot, and only to prove that math is not an exact science. And I'm sure there's billions of people out there that will like go, no, that's not true, and probably have the answer. But it's just a joke. It's just the real people, because when, you know, people get my stage, math is the only science, math is the only science, math is the only science, and they get on that soapbox about math being the only science, and it's, you're a big math guy, right? Or are you not? No, probably not. I throw this joke at them. So this is my stumble and fall on the mathematical world. Okay, guys, you ready?
Okay.
Get your pens out.
Yes.
Get your pens out. Okay, three salesmen walk into a hotel. The clerk says the bill is $30 for the room. Each salesman hands the clerk a $10 bill. They go to their room. The hotel manager comes in and says, no, no, that room was was $25 for the convention. He hands the bellhop a $1 bill. Okay? The bellhop says, I cannot split $5 between three men. Takes $2, puts it in his back pocket. He hands each man $1 each. Therefore, each man paid $9 for his room. 9 times 3 is 27. The bellhop has $2 in his pocket. 27 plus 2 is 29. What happened to the other dollar?
It probably has a lot to do with puppy dogs.
So, sometimes somebody comes along, and I know there's mathematical geniuses out there that'll say you can't mix mathematical formulas, you can't divide 3.333. I know there's mathematical formulas. But sometimes when you just throw things like at them, people just look at you like, that's not right. You can't do it that way. But there's the simple question is, what happened to the other dollar? Because if you use the mathematical formulas presented as I did, it doesn't work. So this is what this is why I like this, because sometimes it's fun just to stump someone and go, what happened to the other dollar? So this is that. This poem reminded me of that. Because the tower will soon be a fable.
Well,
I really like that.
I had a follow-up to this. Sweet. How's that? In my 2 or 3 minutes after I finished the poem, I started looking at Soapbox. And, of course, Soapbox, you go to Speaker's Corner. And Speaker's Corner in London. I've been to Speaker's Corner before. And Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park is famous because it has everybody there sort of on the soapbox giving a rendition of things, and usually there's 25 people there doing it. Anyway, it's famously bacterial disease, and they say, and this is the lyrics, not mine, from Dire Straits. Now I go down to Speaker's Corner, I'm thunderstruck. They got free speech tourists, police in trucks. Two men say they're Jesus. One of them must be wrong.
That's awesome.
Right.
See, there you go.
Fine. Yeah.
Well, find out which one can give me why.
I always love that line. That song was in the first album I ever purchased, which was Love Over Gold by Dire Straits, and I purchased it in 1982 when I was, 14?
You know, if you were 14 in 1982... I am older.
I knew you were going to do the math.
I'm older than you, Keith.
I'm an old bugger, it has to be said.
No, I'm older than you are.
Oh, well, there you go.
If you are 14 in 1982, I'm older than you are. So quit calling yourself
old.
Oh, there
you go. I can call myself old. You can call yourself young, and we'll probably meet somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Because in 1982, I was 15.
Uh-huh.
No, I was 16. I turned 16. Because in 1983, I was 17 and had my first baby. There you go.
I was 18.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. That is big. That is big.
Yeah. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Because you had just graduated from high school in 85.
Wow.
I graduated in 84. Well, technically, I graduated in 83.
I thought you were older than that, AP.
No. It's just the wisdom that's in the poems, Rack. It sort of, takes you to a different place. I understand.
I will tell you, I look fabulous for an old lady. So that's all I care about.
There you go. No, well, I consider myself old, and I'm aging disgracefully.
You're not even in your 60s, so quit. You're not even considered like a senior citizen. I don't even see. Don't even go there.
Yeah, sweet. You age like wine, sweet. We age like milk.
No, see, I think it's the other way around. I think men age much finer than women.
Oh, you think?
But
okay.
I do. I think men age much finer than women. I mean, you get distinguished and you have fine, beautiful hair. And women, like, we battle it, like, all that kind of stuff. I have to fight it out all the way. Except for my skin. I have great skin. I got to give that to my mom. I have beautiful Georgia peach skin. So I'm happy about that. That's unlucky about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very, very happy about that. Thank God. But yeah, it is what it is. But,
I like your soapbox poem, AP.
I do too.
I think it brings out the importance of perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I have to say, as a male living in Australia, I'm very, very lucky to be in Australia because, of course, our life expectancy continues to grow, and we're up on the top 5 or 6 in the planet in terms of men's life expectancy age. So if I was going to be anywhere sweet, I should be here, obviously.
Good.
Then there's the perspective. You don't necessarily live longer. It just seems that way.
Well, that's true, too. Very, very true. Absolutely true.
Yeah, so, isn't that true? I don't know. I like it. I have my little, I don't know, I have a couple of soapbox poems, and I'm not sure what I want to do.
Well, you got enough time to play all of them, so let's do it.
I've got another poem, too. Sweet, except this one looks like a pulpit. It's shaped.
Oh yes, a good shape poem is always something.
A shape poem. Yeah, a shape poem.
Yeah, you know those.
He gets paid by scale to write those.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know what. By anyway, but I don't know, if somebody paid me to write them, I'd be really happy, right? Didn't care what the scale or what it was.
But they do make sweet tea recoil.
No, they don't. I actually have tried a few. AP's actually given me a little bit of help here and there. He's critiqued everyone I've done, the three. So he's helped me there. Okay, I've got people in the studio, so let me say hi. We're talking away.
Yeah.
Hi, Deb.
Hello.
Hi, Wayne.
Hello.
How are you?
Wayne Jett.
Sorry, guys.
Hey, Deb.
We're jibber-jabbing away and not answering phones.
There's about to be separate longevity.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I agree, Wayne.
There is a lot to be said for longevity. So I'm going to read the oldest poem I have on AP, which was a soapbox poem. And it actually, it's kind of me slipping off my soapbox in, and it's very odd. And I think most of you have heard it before, but it is my weirdest, it's soapbox poem that actually, it's very deep, actually, and it's kind of odd. So I apologize, but it is one of those weird moments where I wrote it and I went, okay, this is what it is, and I guess I just have to read it because that's the way it is.
You thank the muse for it. You move on.
I wrote it when I was 17 years old. And yeah. And it is very, now I just lost it. I just had it. Isn't that awful? That's just awful. I apologize. Oh, God. Thank you. Susan. There you go. Thank you. Hatter, I love you. Thank you.
That was perfect timing.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much. I deserve that very much. Very, very much.
It was my pleasure.
Oh, that was you. I thought that was Hatter. Actually, Deb, if you want to throw yours on the board, that would be great. And then I'll have something on there while I'm acting like a fool because I got to go find my own home.
If you just tell me the title, I'll grab it.
Oh, you know what? I got it. I found it. As I'm talking, I'm like, getting all nervous. But I found it. Yay. Sweetie, you're not as dumb as you look. And you know what? I cannot believe I am so silly. There we go. Guys, I did it. Yay. So this is I fell out, put my foot in my mouth and got everybody mad at me. And my family was upset and everything like that. But I still call it my favorite soapbox poem. So this is called Premature. Womb to tomb, they said it would be. Intravenously, my conscience drifted away from me. It was there I saw God and I screamed in his face. You sent your son down, perfect and fine. Now you're going to mess with mine. You slaughtered your son. I just want to love mine. Give me a minute to get my gun. But this is the game, God. I'll give you 2 for 1. Ripped from the womb, bloody, breathing, wires, tubes, machine, encased in glass tomb. So tiny, so weak, so special, so sweet. My son looked up at me, and I was amazed at what I did see. He stood before God and screamed in his face, "What do you think I would do, lie down and die for you? God, you knew. You knew your son loved you. Of that you were sure. Give me my time, Lord, so I can love her." I watched my son take each little breath, waiting for what might come next. Please, God, I pray to take my baby away. You sent your son down perfect and fine. And now you're going to mess with mine. You slaughtered your son. I just want to love mine. Give me a minute to get my gun. If this is the game, God, I'll give you 2 for 1. End quote.
That's quite a piece. Wow.
So I got up on my high horse and just was very angry through that whole time. And my very religious father got very angry because I happened to have read it in public at a church. So those are things you don't do, but that's how it goes. So,
well, those are things some of us don't do. Apparently others do.
So when we step off our soapbox, because it's something I regret doing, but I still like the poem a lot because that's how I felt. But Touch out between your foot and your mouth.
From a philosophical perspective, sweet, you know, I won't say irony is irony, but, you know, when you talk about, you know, the idea was he gave his life for you, well, you know, it's the same thing. You know, you want, they want to call it blasphemy. I don't know. I don't see it that way. Anyway.
I said the religious aspect. I was upset and I was angry. So this is the soapbox about my... I should have never done where I did. So, hence I fell off the soapbox very hard. All right.
Do you want comments?
Well, if anybody wants to give them, but other than that, we're good.
Go for it, Wayne.
I said, "Wow, this is deep, emotional, heartbreaking, sad. Then you got a little dark, a little humor." That touched my soul. Good job.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it. All right.
Let's speak up.
Great,
if
sweet.
I could.
Go ahead, AP.
I mean, I was meant to be there for the birth of my first son, and I wasn't because everything went so badly wrong so quickly that my ex, you know, was under in about 2-3 minutes, and the baby was out 2-3 minutes after that. So I had the bump for the first 6 or 8 hours because my wife was completely knocked out for that whole period, which was kind of interesting, really, because I wasn't expecting that. You know, I sort of was expecting it to be sort of shared time and whatever, but it was kind of fun. Because there was sort of just the two of us there, this little bundle wrapped up in white that was still quite angry at the world, having been really comfortable and then uncomfortable very quickly. And then I think thought it was going to get its mum, and it got me. And so I was sort of talking to this angry bub, and I could get it to sleep, which was good for a little while. But it's a very, I mean, and I haven't sort of birthed the thing, I just had it. But it's an incredible time, and the emotions are sort of everywhere, really. And because you've got your own emotions, you've got the emotions of family, you've got this whole sort of strange kaleidoscope of things going on. And so I can actually see how the poem got written. I really can. And because it's in the midst of this whole tumble of stuff. And it's not right, it's not wrong, it's just a tumble. And it's like you're in a washing machine, and you know you pick stuff out of that. And I think that it's a really great poem because of that. It feels like you're in the washing machine.
Thank you, AP.
And sweet, I remember when you read this the first time. By the time you were finished, my vision was blurry from the tears, and I thought you lost him, and it was like I almost, you know, I was feeling really overwhelmed. Yeah. So the emotion that you had running through here was so potent that you know, like it knocked my socks off.
I haven't read it in years. I think it was because it was one of the first poems I put on AP, and it was, like I said, it's the oldest poem I put, not the oldest poem I've written, but the oldest poem I have on AP, you know, but it's like the one I feel I put my foot in my mouth as far as being on a soapbox about.
It was May 2018 when you read it the first time.
I want to say, when I saw your topic was soapbox, the thing that struck me most about that was the passion that's connected to it. You know, people can pontificate about whatever they want, but it's when they're passionate about what they're talking about that it comes through most. And you know, that's
right.
Really what came through more than anything to me is, you know, you're talking about something that's so close to your heart, you know, to me that excuses any kind of irreverence or any kind of anything that you want to attach to it. You know, it's like, well, take it for what it's worth. It's really very emotional, though, and you could tell it hits home and means a lot.
Right. It absolutely does. I mean, it's very important to me. It's very passionate, and I know that AP was talking about the place in London. I'm sure anybody that gets up on that box thinks that what they have to say is the utmost importance. And I think in the whole world, sometimes that right now there's a lot being said that's very passionate by a lot of people, and you know sometimes we just slip and we forget that there's what we have to say is passionate to us, but not to others, and we're losing the ability to be kind. And that's what I mean by slipping off our soapbox sometimes, because this was passionate to me, but I forgot my ability to be kind. So.
Beautiful poem.
Thank you. All right. What's up? What's up next here? AP, you're up.
No, the only reason I put it up there was because it fits quite beautifully from what you just said. Sweet. It fits quite beautifully from what you said. This is Something Lies in Words. And strangely enough, it's free verse, and it goes like a little bit like this. The good soapbox has height with station, by presence is oft likened to a pulpit, whereupon a sermon is catapulted as a vessel, cast off seal moorings. The backwash leaps metaphorically as soap hurries within a bathtub, waves catching many unaware and few held staring upwards. For something lies in words, crafted by those with skill, just felt forgotten in hurry as joining a growing crowd. Somewhere such enough good held, or left this to will topple when I say Lemmings in poem.
Lemmings. Sweet, you had to unmute.
And we know they did not. Yeah, I know. Sorry. And we all know they were murdered. I really like this because that is exactly what I was talking about. I mean, backwash leaks metaphorically as soap hurries within a bathtub, waves catching many unaware and a few held staring upwards, because something does lie in words. So many are crafted with skill. We don't always necessarily know what's being said, but sometimes it's said with such passion and such greatness and power that you just follow along. I mean, we can talk about, you know, like your Jim Joneses and so many. That there is just passion, and you follow along. And I really appreciate this because that's the core of what I was trying to get to. And beautifully done, AP. Deb, your thoughts?
Well, I was taken right away by the first two lines because of the contrast there, because it's like, and then it throws you back to the title, Something Lies in Words. Excuse me. Like, The good soapbox has height with station, by presence it's oft likened to a pulpit. But the contrast there is the soapbox, you're standing on there and you're trying to get people to listen and hear and maybe do something about it. And to me, when you're standing behind that pulpit, you're trying to force feed people what you want them to do, rather than hoping or nudging. So I was, like I said, struck by the differences there. And towards the end of the pulpit there, for something lies in words crafted by those with skill, dissolved, forgotten in hurry as join a growing crowd. It's like sometimes the person lies and spins their little web, and it's with such skill that people believe it, and then there's that that the mob mentality type of thing. So there's I see a lot of different evidence of the soapbox and falling off, and then of course the wit at the end with tossing out that word lemming. Cool, right?
Thank you.
And Lee, your thoughts.
I thought it was a very good poem, and it's kind of it points picture people in the soapbox a little bit, and just know how they have a perspective from it. So it was a good poem. I enjoyed it. Oh, good job.
Thank you, Wayne. Cheers.
And Rack.
I have to chuckle that Deb said tossing out that word lemmings after that conversation the last time we had about lemmings. Sometimes where somebody is making their speech adds some credibility to their words and tends to make people, from the pulpit, you know, that they're sheep, they're a flock. So that's very, you know, metaphorically appropriate. It's one of those things, you know, I would say, you know, the thought is very tight-knit, you know, one thing relates to the other in a very close way. There's a lot of subtlety and brilliance to that, really is. When you talk about, you know, someone giving up a speech, you know, and likening it to a sermon, you know, the two aren't that far apart, really. So, yeah, the whole thought of this was great. Lemmings. Toss that out there.
Thank you. Right. I should say, too, because you won't have seen it as such, it does have a lovely pulpity type shape to the poem. So it sort of goes down the page in a sort of flowing pulpit shape as well. So if you're into that sort of thing.
Forget the shape.
Never forget the shape. No.
That's right.
No, can't forget. But
we're back to math and figures now.
Oh, occasionally.
Oh. All right. Deb, please read your poem. Looks beautiful. I love the picture.
All right. Let me go back over there. All right. So, like, I tried all day, off and on, trying to write the poem, and I had, like, three different starters in my drafts, and it was just like, okay, I can't do this. But I saw a movie, The Shape of Water, and the movie was but the quote has been driving me crazy. The quote is, "Unable to perceive the shape of you, I find you all around me. Your presence fills my eyes with your love. It humbles my heart, for you are everywhere." And like I said, the quote stuck with me. So this is called "In White Clouds and the Aqua Sea, Eyes Find the Shape of You." Oh, and sweet, another note on this. Remember that poet that you introduced us to from Ohio? I can't think of his name. He's had three names.
Paul Dunbar?
Paul
Dunbar. Yeah.
I wrote this in the rhyme pattern that I thought was amazing from one of his poems. And I forgot to put that in the author's notes. I'll have to add that.
Okay.
"Outside the view grew gray that day. Sunlight ducked into the clouds. Haze blanketed the buzzard's bay. Then I spied plump rain shrouds. On pea-green cottage by the sea, the thin tin weather vane spun. From winds racing the air Grand Prix, rotating whirlwinds won. Now out the sunroom window pane, lightning zaps the cobalt sky. As from the sky pours down the rain that soaks the cliffs I spy. High tide flows through the coastal view, shape-shifting the ebb and flow. And in that view, the sea foam too flows into the shape of you." And pull.
Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, the essence of the poem is just stunning. There's my favorite word. The high tide flows to the coast of view, shape shifting the ebb and flow, and in that view, the sea foam too goes into the shape of you. I love water and the oceans, and I think that anything that's fluid like that, that can be a part of you and just wrap around you and be fluid with you. I think that this kind of romantic and sensual and brings a fulfillment it ebbs and flows with you. So I thought that was beautiful. Obviously, your colors that you use, and you know, you've got actionable verbs in there like rotating and lightning zaps and winds racing. So you have some sensuality in there as far as the movement of the two of you together and stuff like that. So I thought that was also very good. And as far as the movie, The Shape of Water, I think that's the one with the weird alien in the, like they're captured in some science lab or something. So that's the right one.
Yeah.
I think the movie was, yeah, too. Okay, yeah. So yeah, the movie was not that great either, but I love the quote. Another beautiful Deborah Lee poem.
Thank you so much.
Your thoughts, AP. You're welcome.
It's a really nice piece. It flows down the page beautifully, and interestingly, it sort of it uses the sort of Dunbar device of the syllable count just changing slightly. And often what you find is that if you start with an eight-syllable line, which is what Deb does every time here, and then goes back to the eight-syllable line for line three and then has a shorter line for line four, for some reason it sounds really good to the ear for that to happen. And I don't know why, but it always does. And so that was a pattern that Dunbar used quite a lot. It's a pattern that Deb's used here. And it gives it a lovely sort of sing-song nature to the read if you use the syllables right and the words right, and that's exactly what Deb's done. So I think it's a lovely poem.
Thank you, AP.
And I can tell her.
You know, Deb, what we have here, you've created a little miracle. You have a little soapbox about water that you turned into a wine. I really liked it. You know, there was a lot of beauty behind what you said, and the idea of the amorphousness of water taking the shape of whatever you put it in. That was actually a philosophy of Bruce Lee also, when he talked about fighting and adapting, you know, the moves to, you know, the way people move to combat and whatnot. So it doesn't go unnoticed. Water's, you know, even in what was that movie, Avatar, with the different the wind and the water and everything. It's a lovely thought, and I like what you did with it. I like the idea of, you know, the water taking the shape, like you described. It was beautiful and also very romantic.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that, Rick.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. Mm. Next up, we have a poem by Kay, which does not
have
a song. Wayne's not here. He had to drop. Yeah, I'm checking the studio rack. That's That Kay can't read. It's just too emotional for her. So I'm actually going to read it for her. So this is called Letter to Abuse by Kay. They never live long enough. Silent abuser. Dumper of life after its cuteness wears off. Smile big. Make it look pretty. Because this cougar preys on the young. In time, it will be his friends. Appearances are everything. Lies from the start. How was I to know? Every time I try to stand up to you like a snake in a grass, you slither away. If only your clients can see what you preach. Every day, you do the exact opposite, making that a joke to your lie, a fraud to your oath, all the while smiling in peddling the lie. It is you that broke me. Every day I'm glad I ate you. Because one day, all those words you shoved down others' throats, in one way or another, you will eat them. I hope it tastes good going down. Definitely a cry that, you know, a soapbox cry that should be something everybody hears and something everyone should know about. I think there's so much abuse that goes on and and especially in her author's notes, where it says, a letter to my abuser who taught me to accept her abuse. Even though she still hurts me, I can't let her break me anymore. But the whole phrase, who taught me to accept her abuse, and that's powerful. When someone can teach you that this is okay that I do this to you. No matter what you say, this is okay. You're going to be good with this. And I think it's very powerful for Kay to say, you know, you can't break me anymore. But it's something we don't talk about, especially, you know, that idea that someone can actually get you to accept it. There's so many people that will stand up and say, you should have walked away. You should have done this. You should have done this. You knew. You should have known better. No, you don't know better. You don't know better. Because you're taught that this is okay. You're taught that this is fine. And I find this very, very powerful. And I'm really glad you brought that because we always talk about standing up against, you know, abusers and how to get help and how to do that. But when you're the one person that's abused and you've been taught that it's okay, it's very difficult to understand when it's not. And I really think that line says a lot. Because sometimes they're such good manipulators. And I definitely know how that feels from the manipulators. So beautiful stuff that you brought to me, Kay. And I really enjoyed it. Not what you went through, but that you were able to bring it and that you're healing and that this is a soapbox that we need to stand up and say, quit telling me I should have known better. Quit telling me that I should have walked away. Quit telling me that everyone knows or whatever it may be that you have that little tagline out of your mouth because you don't know. You don't know what it's like. You weren't there. And by the way, I hope that nothing good comes to that person. I don't need to forgive them. I don't need to do any of that. I need to be good to me from now on. And I like that you can tell them, you broke me, you SOB, and I hope that everything you ever did good, I hope it gets shoved down your effing throat. I really like it. All right. Deb, your thoughts?
I so agree. I think that the power of writing this down was very therapeutic. And you know, it's the words sometimes that hit harder and scar deeper than the physical. And like you said, the part about grooming you into thinking that it's okay, that, you know, you don't know any better. And then when you realize or you learn, it's like, how could you? And all these things go through your mind. But most of all, I'm so glad I'm not you. I'm so glad I'm not you. I'm so glad I'm not you. I will do the things you do. and I like the little, like the brown recluse in the beginning and the snake in the grass that slithers away. And even as powerful as you preach every day, but then you do the exact opposite. It's like, you know, you talk the talk, but it's all bull, and you definitely don't walk the walk afterwards, you know. And I'm done. I'm not playing your game anymore. You know, the scars are there. Let them heal. They'll never go away.
Absolutely. And AP.
Yeah, it sort of struck me as the person that was abusing had some sort of mantle of trust, and I don't know whether, and it comes with who the person is, and we give that to people, whether they're people in churches or they're people in hospitals or they're people in different places. There's an automatic sort of mantle of responsibility that we give to those people, whether it's right or wrong. If they're in a position like this and they're an abuser, it's a terrible, awful thing, because it makes us question everything about, you know, why that person has a particular office and why they do what they do. And that's why, and so many people have seen it, and that's why it's such a dreadful thing. And I think it's a powerful, before today. And I think it's wonderful, and I agree with Deb, therapeutic to write this and to have it out there and for other people to see it.
And Rag and Tour.
Yeah, I kind of chuckled when you said you like this, because, you know, the idea that you might be taking delight in somebody's pain. But, you know, I can relate to what you're talking about, because, you know, I have, you know, similar thoughts a lot that I write about. And sometimes it feels like people are, like, taking joy in it and not, you know, in the idea that she's coming up with, you know, the emotions that she's dealing with. And that's really... your soapbox thing on a soapbox. And sometimes when we're dealing with those kinds of emotions, the only way to get through it is to hope that we're around to see when it comes back and it bites them in the form of some kind of poetic justice. You know, the way that she put it about the words going down, that was absolutely wonderful. I really enjoyed that very much. I hope, you know, you choke as you try and swallow them. I think that was how she put it. You know, that idea always sits well with me, because, you know, when you're dealing with people that deal in things like that, you know, inadvertently, eventually, that's, I think, where they wind up. So, yeah, you kind of look forward to being around to watch that happen to them. Because that's like the payback. It's almost like a guilty pleasure, even, because, you know, you really, well, it's, karmically, you don't wish harm on other people, but at the same time, it's like, you know, yeah, but I see it coming, you know, and there's a little comfort in that idea that, you know, they kind of held you under their finger and watched you twist, and, well, it's going to come back at you tenfold at some point, you know, and that's the only way that I survive, you know. I can appreciate that. So, yeah, this is very emotional, Kay, and I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's see. AP, do you have one more open poetry you want to throw up there for me?
Deb,
if you have one more. Right. And Deb, if you have one more. And Rack, if you have one you want me to read, let me know. And then I'll do one more, and we'll be done with the show.
There you go. Well, I've got one for you. Sweet. This is open poetry. So this is one that I quite like. So here we go. This is by the Sweeping Bend.
Okay.
And it goes a little bit like this. Once upon a gum tree, there sat our post box by the track. And it was a bike ride to see what a post you'd taken from their sack. The letterbox was a tiny boost, and it went mail from our house on the hill, a small white and red diversion, as timber trucks rattled towards mill. Sitting upon a small verge, past a fast downward curving left bend, near where the state forests merge, magpies and bellbirds in song ascend. Nervously they would twitter as winged around with a flutter to pipe. Somewhere in the leaf litter, snakes and goannas paused to strike. On the way by, when the clock turned 10, we would as a group wander the path. Christmas letters written by pen, men alert with their thick wooden staff. Yet, the birdsong now long gone, rusted tin instead of a house behind. Days when voices for mail shone, winds sail past to a rusty hinge grind. End poem.
That is absolutely beautiful. I like the title, FYI. You know, I love this poem, as you know. And then you also know why I don't like it. But we've gone through this whole discussion as to why I don't like it.
We have.
But I'm not going to go there because I'm focusing on all the pretty things that you talk about. Okay?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. I think that Australia has got to be one of the most beautiful places in the world and all of that. So I'm not going to think about anything but the prettiness, okay? You know, I'm not going to think how nervous you were walking to the little post office and how you couldn't play with the sticks. But we're going to talk about the bird song, okay? We're going to talk about, you know, the little magpies and the bluebells and all of that. We're not talking about the little snakes and little things sitting there ready to strike you. Yeah. We're not going to go there. As a matter of fact, I'm just going to say you have such lovely cadence and all of that in this poem. And I'm glad that you had such lovely time going to get your Christmas letters when it was 150 degrees and it was summer and it was just beautiful there. And that's all we're going to talk about. And not the awful snakes. Ugh. All right. And Deb, your thoughts on this beautiful poem.
Well, I'm just going to read what I wrote. I wrote, oh, my goodness, this is incredible. And the feel that is a tender memory oozes from the lines. Such a fantastic piece of you in the lines, and the photo at the bottom is priceless. Loving where the prompt sent you. Wow. This was one of mine, and I remember it being completely unexpected for the prompt. And then the little mailbox and the story that you told on that show about the little mailbox was really awesome. So I thought this was a good one to pull out. Great to hear it again.
Thanks.
And Deb, do you have another open poetry one for me?
Well, I actually went and found the butterfly one from a few years ago, and because it has in the author's notes the place, a link to get free seeds to plant and help save the monarch butterflies. So, did I put it on the right spot? I did. Okay. And it's just a little one. It's called She Sobs for the Milkweed Drinkers. Here we go. She weeps for insects like peas and thick smog circling poison plants and trees. A five-star tangerine tiger lily dots purple-striped beehive hair. Big brown eyes spill salted teardrops falling from a painted candy skull stare. Planet Earth may lose all the butterflies with wings like those two on her back. Orange and white spot on edges and lined in hues licorice black. Pollution strangles flowers, poisoning their nectar. Planting a bush can aid her. End poem.
Mm-hmm.
And I only wrote it as something to attach the little thing at the bottom. And like I said, if you click on it, it'll tell you how to get the seeds for free. How much easier is it to help a butterfly than for free? Just saying.
I like this anyway. I love this anyway. I think I love the rhyme on it. I love the picture. I remember when you gave us these little pictures. I happen to still love my little poem with my picture too. And I don't usually say I like my poems, but I do like the poem on that one. And again, I think it's great. I thought, you know, planting a bush can aid her. I love that we can simply plant a bush. And I can't believe I didn't even comment on this earlier, so I'm an idiot. This is great. Plant earth and lose all the butterflies. Like, not technically one, but with wings like those two on her back. I think it's just great cadence, great rhyme. and it fits the little picture perfectly. And I love that you have the get the free milk seeds to help save a monarch butterfly, which I will copy and paste and put on my my Facebook page too. So this is gorgeous. Rack, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is beautiful, Deb. I love how you brought out, you know, the colors of the butterfly too, you know, and never fail crayons, the licorice black and things like that. They're, you know, beautiful to look at. And in the beginning, when you mentioned milkweed drinkers, you know, that's kind of cool too, because, you know, people think in terms of themselves, so, you know, humans or whatever. So when you say milkweed drinkers, it's like, wait a minute, what's she talking about? You know, so it kind of stops you for a second. And kind of hones you in on what you're talking about as the story, you know, carries on, like a butterfly in a field. So that was beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Yes. And Rack, do you see something that you wanted me to read?
It's the last one I published, The Cliche in My Chest.
Now I just have to, how you spell your name, C-A-what?
R-A-C-O-N-T-E-U-R.
R-A-C-O, sorry.
And like.
Okay. R-A-C-O-N-T, what?
E-U-R.
E-U-R. Rack and Twill.
Yep. While you are doing that, sweet, I have to say that you cannot get in Australia free seeds for your garden. You have to actually go out and buy a butterfly mix still. So I'm not sure if that says good or bad things, but you cannot get free seeds, milkweed sent in Australia. I wish you could, but you can't. Sorry.
Well, that's sad.
No.
The whole ecological landscape thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they're afraid a snake will bite you.
Maybe, sweet, but we're not talking about snakes or goannas because they didn't appear in the pond. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
All right,
so this is A Cliche in My Heart by Rock and Pool.
My chest.
I believe I put it on the board. Oh, we have stuff. I don't know why I said heart. I'm reading.
Because that's
I can read.
Chest.
Yeah. A Cliche in My Chest by Rack on Tour. No amount of do you know this one by heart?
No, I don't.
Okay. I just start reading, assuming that you don't know this one, but you know so many. Okay. A Cliche in My Chest by Rack on Tour. No amount of tears can wash away the pain of the shrapnel spread by broken dreams, hemorrhage, fabrication they can no longer sustain. Contemplating fragment reflections only leads to more questions, leading my mind with doubt and mistrust, giving root to imagined imperfections. Any happiness hiding in the shadows of memories covered in dust, vanish like a plume of smoke carried on the wind in an irresistible gust. Cleaning out cobwebs in the dark corners of my mind, allowing the shadow to consume whatever is left behind, leaving me fractured and dysfunctional, choking on the lies that I've swallowed. There's no point in sharing the moon and the time that I'm living on. The time that I'm living on is already borrowed. And poem. Damn! Why do you write like this? You just kill me. Cleaning out cobwebs in the darkness of my mind, allowing the shadows to consume whatever is left behind. Just fold yourself into it. That's how I feel. This, again, another Hurt Locker poem where you just fold into the darkness and just there's, you know, I believed, I gave myself, and now there's nothing. So I'm just going to fold away into the darkness and, you know, choke down the lies that I swallowed from you, and I'm fractured, and I'm just going to live on whatever time I have left without you. Just beautifully written, Raconteur. Dev, your thoughts?
Yeah, I literally just typed your Hurt Locker kicks my ass in his comments down here at the bottom. It's like there's always such powerful, powerful emotion in them. And like the one I quoted was, any happiness hiding in the shadows of memories covered in dust vanish like a plume of smoke carried on the wind and irresistible gust. And I think it was back before that, contemplating fragmented reflections only leads to more questions. Damn. The cliche in my chest. You know, like I said when I started the comment, the grip that your Hurt Locker takes on us is amazing. And like 60 of them, you could be crying your eyes out by the end of that list. Just saying.
Thanks, Deb.
And AC.
Say, Rack, this poem sort of reminds me of an event that went on in the world in the last few days. And there was this sort of sense of hope there for about 12 hours in the world because Russia and the Ukraine managed to come to an agreement to actually get the grain that was produced in the Ukraine and get it sent to all those people who need it, mainly in Africa. And there was an agreement reached, and everybody thought, well, that was kind of inspiring because these two people are fighting a war against each other. And then not less than 12 hours later, Russia decided to send a whole heap of cruise missiles to the port at Odessa and blow up the very port that they were going to be exporting the wheat from. And there's a darkness and a tortured reality about that action that is reflected in the words of this poem, very sadly.
Thank you, AP.
Hi, Deb.
Deb has to go. She's running late, obviously.
Bye, Deb.
We're going to talk. Bye, Deb. We're going to go. Thursday night is your show. What is that all about?
It's actually similar to your soapbox. It's about the emotions and kind of behind it. The way that, you know, the passion and the fallout, you know, when you care about something or someone and there's that expectation and of understanding from that person. So when you vent in front of them or something like that, you know, you're not really taking it out on them, but they can't help but feel like you are, you know, because of your relationship and, you know, the way you are around people because, you know, you're the person they care about. So you let your guard down in front of them and then they see that ugly side. And they think that, that you're taking it out on them, but you're really not. So, you know, it's kind of a vicious cycle and it's difficult. So it's that emotional turmoil that happens when you're passionate about something, really.
And then Friday night is the Man Cave with Stephen and Hatter. And then Saturday night, APU, you're up with?
I am. Now, we're going a couple of hours early, it should be said. So we're actually going to be a couple of hours earlier than what we'll be normally. So just note that. And we are running on space, which is kind of fun because I think, you know, what could be better than, you know, talking about the magnitude of space, but then I think about a cardboard box and it all folds into pieces, and if there wasn't space, there wouldn't be a box. Anyway, that's just me. Lots of space poems.
All right, space poems. And then we're back on Monday with Deb's personal pop show. So, I am going to end the show with a beautiful poem of mine, and then we'll say goodnight. So thank you guys for being here tonight. I greatly appreciate it. You, Mr. Raconteur, Mr. AP, Ms. Deb, and Mr. Wayne. I had a great time with my little soapbox world. So this is How Far Will I Go by Sweetie. Worn leather hands made promises on barren flesh, soothing a fractured life protruding from cold rotting bones. Green eyes sighed and blue yesterdays melted into oblivion. Cosmic radiation poisoned the atmosphere outside of us, sucking the marrow from the physique of our anatomy, starving into our corpus to our sexuality. Suns and moons met over oceans and fingers loosened from our hands, kisses and the echo of our kindness and death, and the sound of thunder drowned out the noise of falling teardrops. Mental capacity is a kaleidoscope of colorful illusions. Whores called friends became part of the confusion. Her longitude and latitude of life is now a triangle. An amalgamation of luxury and sin, an alliance of betrayal and ignorance, a dance in the darkness, a waltz of lies and denial. How far will I go to keep my vows? If I stay, I guess I'll stay here. Forever, you're gone.
Wow. You know, that idea of how far will I go, I really like that thought because, you know, that speaks to your passion and that speaks to the emotion behind that thought. That's just, yeah. How much is too much? How far is too far? When you're talking about something that you care about, you know, is there such a thing? Wow. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Pete, can you comment for Sweet?
Well, it's interesting, Rack, because I don't know if you probably are very aware, but the City of New York has just re-released a public service announcement on what to do should there be a nuclear attack, and reminded all of the citizens what it is that you should be doing or not, and so I sort of thought it was interesting that was reflected in cosmic radiation poisoned the atmosphere outside of us, and it took me down a whole heap of corridors and stuff that were completely unrelated to what Sweet Pea was talking about, but I had fun. Well done.
Why, thank you, I think, but okay, thank you. always love when that happens to you.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Well, that is the beautiful night. We're now in New York with the new ways to avoid cosmic radiation and nuclear war. That's a lovely thought. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you guys for being here. Hope everyone has a beautiful night. We'll see you on the flip side of all this, and we're going to go out with the same song we started, Sweet's or Pink's Attic. Have a great night, you guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Roy. Thanks, Rack.
Good night.
Pages full of crazy cluttered spaces that you could not cross. My attic is full of bones and full of hope of young emotions that just won't grow up. I keep hiding the keys in all these places even I can't find. wake-up call. I never should have.